When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Zach Beach. Zach, MA, is committed to building a world based on love and connection. For over 10 years, he has been traveling the world teaching love in the form of yoga, meditation, writing, poetry, and coaching. He is the host of the weekly Learn to Love podcast, which features therapists, coaches, authors, and educators, and has reached hundreds of thousands of listeners across over 100 countries. He founded the Heart Center Love School, which hosts compassion cultivation trainings and other workshops. Zach's formal education includes an MA in East-West Psychology from the California Institute of Integral Studies and a BS from Northwestern University. He is currently a student in the Marriage and Family Therapy Program, and he is continuing his yoga training in India, as well as Buddhist meditation training and mindful self-compassion training. Zach's incredible book, Love and Suffering, A Spiritual Guide for Helpers, Healers, and Humans, is out now. Lovely. Thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my fellow yogi. Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And wow. What an amazing book you have written. Honestly. Oh. And it is so needed. Love and Suffering. It's just the complete opposite ends that would have to bring together to bring that balance within us. Yeah. At this important time. And this is the most important time, I believe, in this world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. I mean... Oh, Zach, I've got so many wonderful questions for you.
Yeah, let's get into it. Thanks so much for having me.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So, first of all, can you tell our audience, please tell our audience about the importance and courage to give and show love in this world now, at this time, even amidst intense suffering like Buddha did, and like Jesus and many others have.
Well, I don't know if you noticed it over there on that side of the pond, but there's a lot of conflict in this world. There's a lot of division. There's a lot of violence. And despite all of our technological and spiritual advancements, there's still war between countries and peoples and genocide. And when we think about how can we cultivate connection? How can we create more peace in the world? What is something that unites us rather than divides us? And I think we can begin with love and suffering. I think that we can see that every human being on this planet, left and right, conservative and liberal, Muslim, Jew, Christian, every single human being wants love, needs love. And every single human being does not want to suffer and does not want to be in pain. And this is, to me, a very good starting point. What can we do to create more suffering? Sorry, more
Hola.
love in the world
Yeah.
and reduce the amount of suffering. What is right? It's what creates more love. What is wrong? It's that which creates more suffering. So when we bring love and suffering together, we get compassion. And compassion for me is a lens with which to view the world. We must recognize that in the first noble truth, life contains suffering for us all. Despite our best efforts, we will encounter sickness, aging, and death. Despite our best efforts, we will encounter things that we don't want in our life. And everyone's fighting a hard battle. So we can be compassionate, and we can see all actions that a human being does as a search for love and a running away from suffering.
Absolutely brilliant. And do you think that I believe we all suffer? Yeah, we all suffer. And I think when we suffer, the what we go through, the more we suffer, and the more we understand that suffering and don't become hardened by that suffering, but learn to bless that suffering and almost embrace that suffering and turn it and use it for the benefit of all for service, then we can understand other people's suffering. When we suffer, we understand that everyone suffers. Therefore, we can understand people and use that compassion to be of service.
Absolutely, 100%. You're already pointing out many of the reasons that we ought to bring suffering into our own personal life. First of all, once you know how to suffer and once you know the nature of suffering, you will suffer less. Secondly, when we do encounter our own suffering and get to know it, it increases our capacity to understand the suffering of others. And I love how you mentioned embrace it. That to me is such a wonderful way of thinking about it. When we have challenging emotions inside of us, anger, frustration, sadness, grief, these are like young children. They're wanting us to embrace them and to hold them and to caress them. And guess what happens when you have a child having a tantrum? It begins to calm down.
Yes, dissolve it dissolves, yeah.
Yeah. So I
Oh.
also just like the metaphor that there's mud in our life and we are here to transform it into the lotus. That suffering needs to be digested, that the only way out is through.
That's right. And suffering can be in many, many, many ways. You know, okay, people can make us suffer. We can self-sabotage. It's our thoughts, our feelings can bring in, you know, that suffering, isn't it? And how do we transmute that?
That's another good verb. I like that, transmute. I'm looking at the beautiful flower behind you, and just the idea of growing what we want to grow and taking out that which we don't want to grow, such a wonderful way of thinking about things. I do think much of our spiritual practice is tending the garden of the mind. And that means watering the seeds and cultivating the seeds that we want in our life that will, of course, bear fruit. And with the weeds, we tear them up, of course, but we compost them. We don't toss them in the garbage. We want to integrate those weeds, that mud, into the lotus of our own awakening. So, every human being, this is why there's still violence in the world, because every human being, we do have seeds of hatred and we do have seeds of love. And we want to cultivate those seeds of love and allow the seeds of hatred to die away.
That's right. So beautiful, so beautiful. That's so true. And you know, that's what my guru, well, my old guru used to say, earth peace through self peace. You know, it's all about us being and having the mastery over our emotions, thoughts, feelings, words, and actions. Yeah. To calm to self, to surrender To embrace that darkness, because we've all got the darkness and we've all got the light within us, haven't we? We come from the oneness into this world of duality, which is the separation. And we're always yearning for that union, whether it's a masculine and feminine union, or the masculine and feminine within us, or the union with our soul consciousness and God consciousness. It's the balance, isn't it? It's the harmony, the wholeness that
Yes.
wanting.
I've been really resonating with St. John of the Cross's term luminous darkness.
I love that. That's beautiful.
But even in what you're saying, I'm definitely hearing hints of the yogic paths that we can take in this life. I tend to start with the four yogic paths of Swami Vivekananda, that there are many paths up the mountain and the view at the top is the same, and it's up for all of us to discover our own path. So of course there is the bhakti path, the path of surrender and love and devotion to the divine. There is of course the path of karma, the path of selfless service and being of service to others, helping the sick, helping the needy. There is the jnana path, the path of knowledge and philosophy and love of wisdom. And then, of course, there is the Raja path. So when you mention mastery over our inner experience, that to me is that to me is the essence of the Raja or royal or king and queen path. It's so interesting to me. A lot of people come to yoga and they're like, okay, what do you want me to do? And then Patanjali says, the first thing you need to do is stop doing things.
Yeah,
That is
see.
the first yama. Stop harming others. Stop lying. Stop being so greedy. So we have to stop perpetuating the thinking that creates violence and suffering in the world. We actually have to stop what we're doing. We have to pause, and we have to look at all the habit energy, all those latent impressions, the samskaras that keep those bad habits from coming up.
Yeah, that's why meditation is so important, because that calms the mind. It brings you into that place of still mind where you can receive that divine intelligence from your higher self, from the God one, and that's the most important thing. It has been in my life anyway,
It is. I always talk about tapas or discipline. And boy, when I talk about discipline in the yogic world, all those free spirits are like, what are you talking about? Like, you're here to oppress me. It's like, just hold on, hold the phone. Because we got to get to the actual meaning of discipline, which comes from the same root as disciple, meaning student. Meaning, if you actually want to learn from your teacher, you have to have the children sit in their desks in order to pay attention. So, yes, there is the asana portion, there is the actually having a seat so that we can receive wisdom and receive knowledge from wherever it may be.
That's right. That's so true, isn't it? Yeah. And many people, in our world at this time, they're full of hopelessness because there's so much violence, there's so much tragedy. Yet for me, I believe that there are more beautiful things happening in this world than there are bad. It's just the media only portrays on negative things. Yeah. Media and newspapers, if you want to see it. And in your book, you encourage us to a new approach, to let suffering be the gateway to compassion, and lead the blossoming of the heart. And that compassion is for each is but we have to have self-compassion first, because if we haven't got self-compassion, and if we don't have the love for ourselves, we cannot give that out to others. And I think that I really truly believe that, so many years ago, the yogis used to go in their cave and stay there for 50 years and have all that knowledge, but only awaken themselves. But the world is in such a dire situation that the new yogis, us in this world, we now have to go within, do the work, find that compassion, find that love of self, and be of service to humanity. And I believe as you be of service, that raises your kundalini naturally to enlightenment.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right that there's steps. And a lot of people jump ahead a little bit. This is something that often comes up in relationships. A lot of people go into what I call premature problem solving. Rather than sit with their partner's challenging emotions rather than just be there for them. They're like, okay, let's immediately go to the solution. So, absolutely, when you're feeling, say, hopeless, you might talk to a friend and they'll be like, oh, just be happy. Like, there's just the sun is shining today. It's like that's actually an avoidance of the suffering that is happening right now. So, the first step, of course, if we do feel hopeless, is to recognize it. Like, allow yourself to feel it. Be like, oh, wow, I'm feeling this right now. And pause and put your hand on your heart and like see where hopelessness is in your body. Get some of that interoception going. Like, where is this arising in my body? Where is this coming from? Can I hold it? Can I encompass it with a larger awareness and a larger compassion? So, absolutely, we do start with ourselves. That is the first step. So, it's okay if you want to go to a cave and meditate on it for a little while. It's okay if you want to put on your own oxygen mask
Of
on first
course,
and
we all
take
have to
care of
go into the
yourself
cave at
first.
some point in our life.
Yes, we need that. You know, even Gandhi, who practically liberated the entirety of India, still every Sunday, he did his spiritual practice. He practiced silence. He practiced fasting once, one day out of the week. He was able to cultivate a peace and stillness in him so that wherever he went, he could bring a love to even those that were oppressing him. So nowadays, people don't even have a minute of the day to sit and breathe. People don't have any time. They're always rushing from one thing to the next. So the first step is absolutely let your own suffering be a gateway to compassion for yourself. Wow, this hopelessness, this despair I'm feeling in me. Wow, that's hard. Like, what can I do for myself right now in this moment? What would make me feel better? And I do really resonate with this idea that we can let our suffering be an act of solidarity. So this is like step two, or might even be step three, that once we realize we are feeling hopeless, guess what? Lots of other people are feeling the exact same way that we are feeling. So once we see that other people are experiencing the same thing, then as you mentioned, exactly, it eventually translates into action. It eventually translates into the Bodhisattva path, the path of liberation for all beings everywhere. So we can start with ourselves, we can close our eyes, and we can find peace and love within ourselves. And then when we open our eyes, we can ask the eternal dialogue of spirit, which is, how can I?
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. It really is. And suffering. How does suffering contrast darkness? Because we're living in a dark versus light, I believe, a love versus, you know, dark. We're living in this world of such dualities. How does the suffering and contrast and darkness in this world push us to the precipice and force us to awaken, force us to change, force us to heal, and force us to awaken to the love within ourselves, the love for others, and the love for God.
Okay. All
Sorry.
right, where shall we begin? So, as a writer and as a poet, I love metaphor. Metaphor is a natural way for human beings to understand their world. And darkness is an extremely powerful metaphor, and you see it across literary works, across time. And there's so many ways to think about it. Like, just the fact that at night it is dark. And the stars are surrounded by darkness, and that's what makes them so much more beautiful, right? Like, everywhere throughout the world, even in places where there is intense suffering, you will see light, you will see the human spirit rising from that darkness. This is the lesson of Viktor Frankl, A Man's Search for Meaning, that in the depth and darkness of a concentration camp, he was able to find the human spirit, the freedom to choose our own attitude in any given situation. Of course, we have the metaphor of darkness in psychology in Carl Jung. And he kind of defined the darkness as the part of ourselves that we have rejected, essentially. And that we have to integrate this, and of course, in order to become whole. Now, the funny thing about, say, the darkness of Jung is that there's often a lot of light in there, meaning, like, you're amazing. Like, just talking to you, Joanne, like, I love your energy. And, like, you just make me so happy just speaking to you right now. But often, like, the positive aspects of us, we put in the shadow. And, like, our ego is, oh, I'm a failure. I'm not saying this is, of course, not you. But the ego says, I'm a failure. I'm worthless. Like, there's no reason for me to be here. And it's actually the shadow that's holding you're awesome. You're beautiful. Your smile lights up a room. So, integrating that darkness is, of course, what brings psychological wholeness to our lives. Another really powerful metaphor of darkness that you see in the mystics, as I mentioned, St. John of the Cross writes about the dark night of the soul.
Oh yeah. Oh well, I believe he's going for a dark night of the soul, individually and collectively.
Yeah, and even then, there's two major ways to interpret it. One is just depression, sadness, despair, hopelessness. Like that we are going through a tunnel and there is a light at the end, and we have to get through this dark night. But there's also just the darkness of unknowing, like the darkness of mystery, of like really not knowing where you are. And I think that's another really beautiful way of thinking about it and a way of embracing mystery, which to me is another way to kind of even define the divine. Like, I do think that love is the shortest definition of God that there
Me
is.
too. What is love? What is love? That's it.
But if we wanted a few more words, we can just say the great mystery, right? The great unknown. And that's what it might mean to surrender into the darkness, is surrender into not knowing, because we clutch onto certainty in so many different ways. But what would it look like to let go?
Yeah, that's so true. Surrender to the trust, surrender to blind faith. This is what it is. That's what faith of God and love of God is, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow. Amazing.
And those are just, again, are just a few of the metaphors of what it really means to integrate darkness into our life.
Because we're all light and dark, and I believe at this time a lot of that darkness is being shown in the world because it has to come out. Like we can't push that darkness down and gloss over it. We can't push that darkness down in us and gloss over it because it's going to come out in some crazy drama later on in your life, or through a relationship or something. It's going to come out. You have to deal with it. You have to look at it. You have to head on to it, as you say in your book, when it lean into it, as you say. Yeah, you have to lean into the suffering and into that dark part of ourselves, which brings it up to the light, embracing it and dissolving it.
Absolutely, 100%. You are so on the mark. I find that spiritual truths are very similar to psychological ones, meaning they point to something fundamental about humanity, about the human spirit. And absolutely, when we try to bury our feelings alive, they never die. That what we resist persists. That our attempts to suppress and deny and push down those emotions, the necessary suffering that we need to feel, it only makes them stronger. Fighting the monster only makes it angrier. We see this in the ancient texts and we see it in modern science. And this is the way, of course, to healing is to embrace, use your verb again, to embrace these aspects of ourselves. And I'm not saying that this is something that you can do alone necessarily. You mentioned a guru, having a teacher, having a therapist, having a loving person who cares about you, who wants to listen to you. These are all wonderful paths forward because none of us can do this alone. We need love. We need also the Sangha community on this path.
Yeah, and we need each other because I believe we're mirrors to each other, and we are here to show each other, to mirror each other our light and dark aspects. That's relationship, is it not?
Yes. Oh my God, you're so right. And when people say, oh, relationships are mirrors, yes, for both the good and the bad. Meaning, yeah, it's amazing to meet somebody who loves us, who sees our essential goodness and reflects it back to us. It's so nice when, say, we wake up in the morning, we look in the mirror, we don't like the person looking back at us, and somebody says, "You're the most beautiful thing I've ever set my eyes on." Right? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and we can be the eye that holds the beauty of another person. Now that's the good part. That's the fun part. Oh, the love, the ecstasy. Like, oh my gosh, somebody tells me I'm amazing. Someone's in love with me. I feel so validated. I feel so honored. I feel so seen. But the mirror will also reflect back the darkness. The mirror will also reflect back your own stuff. So relationships absolutely are mirrors. And we look at the mirror and we see mud on our face and we're like, oh, that must be mud on the mirror. My partner must be the problem here. I need to fix my partner. They're the ones who are causing conflict in this relationship. Most certainly not me. But instead, of course, we need to acknowledge that the stuff that comes up in our intimate relationship is there for our own growth and healing. So, as the saying goes, and we say this in couples therapy, we all marry our unfinished business.
And
So,
that's so true. And then every relationship, you evolve and grow to be a better person through that every relationship that you have, until you come to meet the one that you might stay with for the rest of your life. So, yes. And you say in your book about the struggle and suffering in relationships, why is being hurt, being hurt by others in relationships, hurting the ones we love, we suffer so much and it really hurts us, doesn't it? And how can we welcome such conflict as an opportunity to grow and heal?
Yeah, exactly. All conflict in a relationship is there for your own
Good.
healing and
Growth.
growth. And working through it and going beyond it is going to be a path of reward beyond measure. Just as with our spiritual path, learning how to integrate suffering into our life for our own awakening, learning to turn the mud into the lotus, the same happens on a very personal or interpersonal level with another person. So, whenever I hear the word like, oh, that person hurt me, that is a wonderful gateway of exploration to look at our reactions to things. Because that is part of our path to shift from reacting to responding, to shift from realizing that we have a freedom to choose our response in any given situation, that we can shift from A, that person hurt me, to B, I am hurt, to C, I am noticing some pain, emotion, frustration, anger. Like, get below the hurt, shift from hurt to like, what is the challenging emotion that is coming up? I'm not even going to say negative emotion because all emotions are messengers and they're there for a reason. To this is the emotion that is coming up within me. Can I hold it? And then can I see that, of course, I am not my emotion? I am not this thing. So even saying I am hurt, you're identifying with this hurt rather than you are the awareness, you are the love, you are the light, you are the spirit, and you are currently experiencing a very temporary emotion that is there for a reason, that is there as a messenger. And once you learn the message that it is trying to teach you, then of course you will grow. So we all have wounds. And yes, relationships will press on those wounds
That's
so
right.
that we know that they are there. Ah, okay, there's that childhood trauma that I've been
That trigger.
repressing,
They always
been separating myself
trigger.
from. Yes.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's so important, to not be the when that happens, poor me. The victim, because to learn to use that is exactly true. Whatever happens, it's our reaction to it, isn't it? To not become the victim of it, but to use it to become the creator, to use it in a positive way, to create, more love and bliss in our relationships and, in the world. Relationships are It's all about union. That's what yoga means, doesn't it? Union, union. Every relationship is to join, is to join, and is to see, I believe, the other, the God in the man, the goddess in the woman, the divine flame within each soul. Because that's all we are. We're just one soul consciousness that divided into 7 billion pieces, inside of every person. But there's only one, And if people knew that, and I think I say this on every podcast, but if everyone realized this realization, I think that's all of these spiritual, the yogis especially, and Buddha, if everyone realized this simple thing that there's only one soul consciousness that we're all sharing. We can't cause harm or conflict on another person because we will be harming and conflicting upon ourselves. So simple.
It is simple. It's frighteningly simple. This is why the wisdom teaching is so powerful. It's often a few sentences that will transform our consciousness, and we have to look at our own resistance to such understanding. And sometimes, in order to get over that resistance, I say, okay, I'm not the creator of this idea here. This has been repeated throughout time. So even hearing your perspective, I'm like, yes, this is exactly what the mystics say upon their
Amazing. Yeah.
mystical awakening.
Yeah.
Across spiritualities, across religions, across time, all the mystics have repeated this exact idea. So I tend to go straight to Thomas Merton, who in his awakening experience said that he felt like suddenly he saw the secret beauty of other people's hearts,
Wow.
the way that we see each other in God's eyes. And
Yeah.
if we all saw each other in this way, there would be no more war, no more hatred, no more cruelty, and no more greed. And
Exactly.
perhaps the biggest problem was that we would all fall to our knees and worship each other.
That's the whole world becoming awakened and enlightened. Yeah, of course, of course, of course. And I think that's God's plan. I think that's the plan. However many thousands of years when we become, I believe, spiritual energy beings on earth, so that heaven and the physical become one. Yes, that may be shall you know that may be the plan, but wow. Yes.
Yes, we're here to awaken. That
Yeah.
is why we are here on this planet, in these human bodies, to learn the lessons that love is God, that God is love, that the divine is within each and every one of us,
Yeah.
and that suffering is something to be embraced because
Yeah.
that is also put there for our own benefit.
Yes.
And even in the Buddhist cosmology of karma and reincarnation, and there's these different realms. Is guess what? This human realm is the perfect mixture of joy and sorrow, of happiness and sadness, because it's the sadness, it's the grief, it's the darkness that catalyzes our growth and our awakening. You don't want to be in heaven. You don't want to be in the celestial realm. It's too good. You're
That's
not going to want to be free from suffering if you have none.
That's right. And also, if you don't go through suffering and wounding, you don't move out of your comfort zone. You don't change. You don't grow. You don't persevere. You don't go for them things and make the world and change the world, change yourself and change the world. This is what causes us to move. Causes us to pushes us to change, pushes us to heal, and I believe pushes us to love. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, earlier you had a question. I was like, oh, yeah, that's also what I wanted to mention is that suffering is often a forcing factor.
Yeah.
Like, even when we look at something like pain, why is it so immediate? Why is it so sudden? Because it's here to protect you, first of all. When you
Right.
put your when you lean your hand on a stove that you think is off and you feel that sensation of burning, you immediately take your hand off. It immediately gets you going. If you're on a hammock, you're just laying there, you could lay there for hours and you feel that bee sting in your back, you start running. It's extremely motivating. It's extremely forcing often in our world. And that's what you find so often is like times of immense suffering in a person's life is a wake-up call.
Yes,
It
that is that people who have they've suddenly had an accident or they've got an illness that's really bad. I look at that as a you've got to look at it. There's always a reason, yeah. There's always the underlining, maybe you was on the wrong path and it stops and it puts them in that bed and it makes them reevaluate everything in their life because it stops them. Yeah, and then it points them and then you go on your correct path.
Yes. I often sometimes have to ask a small, like a small asterisk onto this idea because obviously we don't want to wish anything terrible on anyone. And when somebody else is suffering, our task is to be compassionate to that suffering.
Of course.
So if something terrible happens to somebody, you don't want to be that person that's like, oh, good. Like now you're going to be
No, no, no,
woken
no,
up.
no, no, no.
No. But yes,
You can
if
see the
it,
reason. It's a personal thing.
yes, personally, when you do experience, yeah, some tragedy in your life, A, you can look at how often in other people's experiences, such a tragedy is a catalyst. And, near-death experiences, a sudden illness. Usually people that go through this see it as a wake-up call. Because, of course, death accentuates life and it makes us more appreciative of the life that we have. So, the personal path, yes, is to look for that message, look for how in the ground is where we find gold. And then, for the interpersonal path, of course, is that of compassion and suffering and holding. Because even when the Buddha says, like, suffering is an illusion, I guarantee you, nobody on this planet wants to be told that their suffering is an
An
illusion.
illusion. No way.
No, you are there. No one wants to be told, oh, you're suffering. That's awesome for
Yeah.
growth. But, on the personal path, that is their task. And for you, your task is to help to alleviate that suffering, to help them, to be of service, to be of kind and compassionate.
That's so true.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And God, source, the Most High, the Creator, God Goddess, is created this world, created us. We are also the creators, created us in its image, in its divine image. For us to create our world. But people say, oh, why is there so much suffering in this world? Why can't God? Why did God do this? Well, we have free will. And I truly believe that we have this stream, the love light divine energy coming in through us, through our higher self, through the soul. And we have a choice every day to use this for good, which is the righteous, godly way, or to use this for bad, which is the egoic, wanting, evil, devil, Satan, if you'd like, way. Yeah. So, it's like, I just believe that negativity and destructive thoughts and that is the egoic path is what you call Satan. Yeah. Because there's only one stream. There's only one stream. And it's with our free will. Don't you think that we can use that into either good or bad? Free will.
So, absolutely. Again, we're on very similar paths over here. First, I like how you mentioned God is the creator and we are God. And this is literally something I think about every morning when I open our eyes. Like, when you open your eyes, the world comes in. Like, our brain essentially creates the world. Right now, your brain is creating the world around you. It's so beautiful, our capacity to experience this world in our own minds. Now, the main theme of the book, Love and Suffering, is that suffering is a teacher and we can welcome it into our life. And the path towards freedom from suffering is a path of reward beyond measure. And each of us has to find our own way. And that is my segue into recognizing that the so-called problem of evil has plagued philosophers and theologians and people of faith ever since the birth of monotheistic religions. So, your personal resolution of why evil and suffering exists in the world, why good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people, this inquiry is extremely rich. Like, why is there suffering? With a supposedly omniscient and all-loving and all-powerful deity who created this world with perfection, why did they, it, he, she also place suffering? Like, really, mosquitoes? That's what I often joke about. Like, really, my back pain? Like, did you have to create this world the way that it is? So, reconciling the problem of evil again is a path of reward beyond measure. And I encourage people to go down that path to come to their own understanding. Like, read what the great thinkers of the world have had to say about it. And absolutely, one of the biggest reasonings for the problem of evil is that it is an unfortunate consequence of free will. Like, basically, God gave us free will,
That's it.
the ability to choose our own destiny, to choose our own actions, and also gave us an infallible guide to live a good, righteous, and loving life. And unfortunately, some human beings will continue to make choices that create more suffering in the world. So God is love, and we know God through love, and violence and suffering exist in the world because we have yet to understand the lesson of love. I believe life is a classroom and love is the lesson, and we are given many opportunities to learn this lesson. We are being sent assignments every single day to live a life of love and self-service and compassion and charity and to decry violence in all its forms, and also to help, say, rehabilitate somebody who maybe experienced a certain upbringing that propelled them to be more violent later on in their life. And that same free will is the freedom to choose our own attitude in any given situation, the ability to choose our own destiny and to make the life that we want to live.
And I believe that we're all here to go through our sufferings, go through our challenges, go through our enlightenings. It's a challenging, enlightening path, this journey of life, to take away all those things that are not love within us. You know, that don't propagate love, to dissolve those things so that eventually we learn to, have that self-love. 'Cause, and then when you have that, then you can love, and you can love others and love God, which is what we're here for.
Mother Earth is crying right now. She is begging for our compassion.
Are people.
Yeah, and we are suffering as a result. We are disconnected from that source.
Yes, disconnection. That's what it is. And that's how love will save the world, because love is truth. Love is connection, and love is strong. You know, people, but love is in the darkness. You know, in the Bible, it says, God says, "For I have created good and I have created evil." There's only one God. There's only one source. There's only one story. There's only one creator of everything, good and bad. That's why it's up to us. We are the expression of that creator, here having this physical expression. That's why it's up to us to dissolve the darkness within and to give out that beautiful divine love that we have in our soul. You know, this is what awakening means. This is what awareness means, doesn't it? Because then when we do that, others will do the same. It's like contagious. Love is contagious. Is it not?
It absolutely is. We are, as human beings, we are social beings. We are wired to connect. When we came into this earth, we were extraordinarily dependent on other people around us for food, shelter, and nutrients. And guess what? That need for connection, for belonging, continues for the rest of our life. So emotions are contagious. If you're walking down the street and you smile at somebody, they might not smile back, but the mirror neurons in their brain for smiling will begin to get activated, and they are more likely to smile after that moment. And yes, it's in the sacred texts that love is God, that love is God, and we know God through love. In Corinthians, it says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Love never fails. So I often have to cite some sources a little bit, just in case people think, oh, those hippies just talking about love all the time. But no, everyone loves that line to love thy neighbor, but you know what else it says? Love thy enemy. And
Yes,
that to me
exactly.
is a very rich path to look at the obstacles that are preventing you from loving all beings everywhere. What is preventing you from loving people you disagree with, from loving people that you might think are causing you harm, and what might it look like to love all non-human creatures on this planet as well?
Yes, because there's only one consciousness that's been shared by all living beings. There's only one, and we're all the same, brothers and sisters, human family. It's one big human family, isn't it?
Yes.
Your book, Love and Suffering, absolutely brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and so needed it at this time, Zach. I really, it's just wonderful. And please tell us, where can we read your book at this time? Because it's published now, isn't it? Wasn't it 1st of September?
Yes, it is published. It's out there. You can get it. Most people just buy books on Amazon. My publisher is actually based in the UK, so you might see it in bookstores over there in Watkins. And I just want to say thank you so much, Joanne. It's been a wonderful pleasure. I love how you said that love is strong, and I think that's the final message I just want to leave your wonderful listeners with. The Spanish word for heart is corazón, and it shares the same root as courage. And that when we get in touch with our hearts, we feel a courage to enter into intense situations in our life with a wide open heart. And even in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, if you want to see the brave, look at those who can forgive. If you want to see the heroic, look at those who can love in return for hatred.
Wow.
So if any of these messages resonated with you, thank you so much for allowing me to talk about love and suffering, a spiritual guide for helpers, healers, and humans. And I just feel like we're on such similar paths, and it makes me so happy, and it warms my heart to know that there's other human beings like you sharing this message with people in the world. So thank you.
And thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show with all your divine wisdom. Thank you.